Welcome to SaaS Unscripted, a podcast by Noble Recruitment. I'm your host, Nick van Eten, and in this podcast, we will take a look behind the scenes of the SaaS world. Join us on a growth journey through stories, challenges, and achievements of the people driving this industry forward. Get ready for SaaS Unscripted. Hey, welcome to another episode of SaaS Unscripted. This is the podcast where we interview people with a glamorous career in SaaS. I'm very excited about this episode. Michael Schmink, he has an incredible journey up to top biller of a global top biller of the SaaS company ChargeBee. And very excited for this one. Can you please introduce yourself, Michael?
What an intro, Nick. thanks for the invite. Really, really appreciate it. Was very much looking forward to this session together with you. Of course, not only because you helped me get into my first sales or SaaS role, but also because we're good friends. So thanks for the invite. By means of an introduction, live in Amsterdam together with my wife, little daughter, Olivia, born 12 weeks ago. And work at ChargeBee. I think that's good for now. Let's dive in later.
And what I also like to discuss today is that you started your journey in recruitment, and I want to hear your learnings, what you took from that to become a global top biller in SaaS.
Absolutely.
Before we dive in, I first want to start with the start. Can you tell me more about your youth? How did you grow up? Where did you go to school? What kind of hobbies did you have? Shall we start with the start?
Start with the start. Born in Huizen in het Gooi. And when I was like 7 years old, we moved to the east part. Dutch people might know it, the Achterhoek. Nice and calm, together with my parents, no brothers and sisters. Eventually decided to study hotel management. I thought I fell in love with the romantic idea of being the general manager of a beautiful 5-star hotel. I was able to experiment a little bit with that during my internship in London, during the Olympics, which was, it was good fun. But it also made me realize that as a general manager of a hotel, it's rather operational instead of you making the strategic decisions. So that's the part where I eventually decided maybe there's something else outside of this hotel world. With a bachelor in hotel management, you're not the most attractive candidate to any position out there.
Tell me about the journey at Page, because you started as trainee.
Correct.
You just mentioned. You ended up with the second of the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you do that?
Yeah. So I, as you know, Michael Page, huge organization, about 10,000 recruitment consultants worldwide, different divisions, and also based on seniority, you would be placed in a certain division. I was doing the junior positions within supply chain and logistics. There was one market in Amsterdam, which was actually based on a few postcodes, which is the Westelijk Havengebied. So the West Harbor of Amsterdam. Well, and since we didn't have any real customers in that region, everything has to be started from scratch. So that also resulted in, after year one, where I thought I was building relationships and doing the right things, leadership was having a conversation with me like, hey, are you sure recruitment is something for you? That hurts, especially when you're, sitting in office 8 in the morning, making 12 hours every day and thinking that you're doing the right things, but apparently leadership thinks differently. So that really hurt it. But that was in, I think, October or November. And then I kicked off the year in Jan with 3 placements. And then, of course, you're as good as your last quarter, because then the tables turn and you start to become the hero of the team. And that evolved pretty well up to the point where, you would enjoy those 4P lunches that we had. You make 4 placements, you go to a Michelin star restaurant every month. And the number of those lunches packed up and stacked up. And then I realized that I earned my Red Card. So Red Card was the logo of Page Personnel, which was a brand of Michael Page, was red. So the Red Card would be when you would hit, 75% of your target, or you would at least exceed, and then whatever number. And then afterwards was the Black Card. And the Black Card was the thing that everybody would be very proud of. Yeah, and then achieved that in the second or third year. I don't even remember. But it also made me realize, like, okay, this is to a degree transactional. I'm curious to have a more long-term impact on a business, build long-standing relationships with maybe more senior stakeholders in the business, but also handle a more complex sale. But yeah, I didn't realize back then that that was SaaS. I was just looking for more money.
At least a very strong motivator of you,
right?
Apparently.
Yeah.
And do you have, before we move to that chapter of your career, do you have tips for recruiters or aspiring recruiters? What did you do to hit all those milestones within Page?
Yeah. And maybe it sounds cliche, but be genuinely curious.
Yeah.
What helped for me is to really understand what people would do on their day-to-day job. Try to understand what makes somebody feel excited about the stuff that they do. And by understanding what their day looks like, it becomes easier as well to understand what their ambitions may be.
Mm-hmm.
While doing that, you start to build a better relationship with your candidates. Then at the same time, you would have the same conversations with the potential hiring managers.
True curiosity that is hard to find. Because
yeah.
You mentioned that you're very money motivated. So is that the reason you are very curious, or are you curious by default and that leads you into these results?
Yeah, so the curiosity is not played.
Yeah.
It's actually just interesting to have a conversation that doesn't stay on the surface, but where you can really connect and just understand. I'm motivated to understand people, their personal motivations and behavior.
And where does it come from, you think?
That's a good question. I actually have no idea.
Yeah, but is there anything that if I ask your mom or dad,
yeah,
okay, how does Michael come so curious?
And maybe it is related to the motivation to sell and do business. So apparently when I was 7 or 8 years old, I always loved going to the Rommelmarkt, which was once every year. I'm not sure what the word is in English, but where I would sell the stuff that I wasn't using. And I came home with a decent amount of money, and they always like, wow, that's interesting. So then I wonder, in order to make a good sale, you have to at least be curious to understand what somebody's motivation would be. So maybe the curiosity is driven by motivation to do business. But I think behavior is something that you can teach yourself as well. So at a certain point in time, it becomes natural to you to be curious.
Mm-hmm. And I also think that on top of that, it's also a natural connector. Like if you walk in whatever bar, you talk to everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that almost gift that you have?
It's always awkward and uncomfortable initially. Doing something for the first time, going into standing in front of a group of people, an audience where you would do a presentation. I remember being super nervous when I was younger. My face would always turn super red, and because of, you know, the maybe insecurity, you would just ramble, not think anymore, to a point that you might even get dizzy. I remember doing my spreekbeurt about chickens when I was 8 or 9 or something. How nervous I was. But that's, I think, the key thing about, and it's, again, I think, cliche because you hear that a lot these days, but being comfortable, being uncomfortable.
Yeah. That's like in every sales book out there, I
guess. So I hate saying it, but it is actually true.
Yeah.
And to a degree, that's a numbers game.
I think if we would talk about parenthood, I think all the cliches are true as well. But we talked to the point that you were, you wanted to jump from Page to the SaaS world.
Yeah.
It's also when we met.
Yeah.
I like to have my pre-screens in the bar. Usually, no, it was, I think that was via a mutual friend. And he connected us and said, Michael, second one the Page, make sure that he has a great job in SaaS. So, okay, let's try. And then, I think you were very, very driven to go into SaaS sales. And I think back then, most hiring managers were quite cautious about hiring someone from a recruitment background.
Very much.
I think we are now to the point that recruitment is one almost a key search for people that go into SDR roles or AE roles. Can you remember, or can you share some experience, how you experienced that period of your search or your life?
I think it was difficult because to your point, Even though as a recruitment consultant, you work on the full deal cycle. So you're responsible for finding the candidate, building relationships with businesses, and then matching the two as well. And I mean, to have two people make decisions about, you know, joining a future, it's different than just selling a solution to somebody, a software solution, because the software is typically not going to say no. But being able to, what I think most hiring managers don't understand when they consider hiring a recruiter for a software position is how complex it is to match two human beings together. That aside, there was a struggle back then. So typically I would apply for AE positions and then they were like, well, we feel more comfortable getting you into an SDR role. And then a good friend of both of us, Rick Thomas, he was like, well, if he's second at Michael Page, yeah, then he can probably sell a bit of software as well. So he finally was able to, you know, step into, how do you say that? Well, you know, take an educated guess and try it with me. Yeah.
It's funny because I think we organized more than 10 interviews back then for you. I think every one of the hiring manager that did not pull the trigger back then hates himself now. I think you took your first step in SaaS sales was at Plot Project,
yeah,
if I'm not
correct,
mistaken.
Correct.
How would you describe that the period of your career?
Yeah, so I had no idea. So we were selling location intelligence based on somebody's physical location. We would track and store that data, which allows retailers, for instance, to enrich customer profiles, have better audiences for their personal enrichment. And then at the same time, our app allowed for, you know, sending push notifications to a user in the scenario where they would be close to a physical store. So like, hey, you know, these products are currently at a discount. Would it be worth going into the store? So if you think about it, very clever solution. And the omni-channel retail or omni-channel revenue growth strategy, we could perfectly align with that. But I remember when typically, when you would deal with a recruitment cycle, you would talk to the hiring manager, to HR, and to the candidate. At least that's what I did back in the day. I would approach it differently right now. However, what I forgot to realize that there are more departments responsible for making that decision in the scenario where it would go with Plot Projects. And I had a colleague back then, Vincent. He was like, well, if you're now talking to the head of product, given this, the thing that we're selling also has an influence on marketing, it has an influence on technology, most likely procurement is going to be involved, and definitely somebody from leadership, because otherwise they'll never sign off on the project. Like, come on, dude, how would you know that? I mean, you don't know my relationship with Arvind. There was specifically a business in India, Future Group, like the biggest retailer out there, 150,000 employees. And I thought I could close that deal with him alone. I had zero idea. So yeah, I think that there was a steep learning curve.
So you closed the business, I assume.
I closed it eventually.
Close lost.
No, I closed one. Yeah. I think today it's still one of the biggest deals that Plot Projects ever closed.
But you closed that business?
I eventually closed them.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I think that was 6,000 or 7,000 MRR. So that was the first kind of enterprise deal that I ended up working on. Yeah.
What did you learn there then? You said something already about DMU or different type of people to target. From that step in recruitment to a smaller SaaS company, what were the biggest differences and what were the biggest learnings?
Yeah, I think the multi-threading, where back in the day, the way I sold, it's all about creating urgency and trying to understand a business or an individual's long-term, maybe strategic objectives. Now, what I didn't do in recruitment is understand, okay, but where's the business heading towards? So why is it so important to ensure that these positions are filled. And what it didn't do, for instance, since Michael Page would, let's say there's a large logistics company. They would have finance, marketing, sales departments, logistics, etc. So we as a team could sell to them together and better align with their long-term strategy, which might be a big retention problem. If we would have collaborated together better at Michael Page and then at the same time work with the different divisions and with their leadership team, I think your proposition would be entirely different. But I never realized how that would work.
And you were a trainee, I guess.
Yeah.
When you started there. Yeah. You worked for a little while at Plot Project.
Yeah.
And there was a point that you were looking again. What happened?
Think total addressable market. So the what you saw is that we required the individual user, so the consumer, to opt in for sharing location. You might remember, I think it was four or five years ago where Apple and Google started to roll out these notifications. Like, hey, this app is tracking your location in the background. That's when the total addressable market of the business significantly decreased. I shifted the focus to India because they were more open to sharing location if you would get something in return, less privacy sensitive compared to Europe and the US. Now with India changing to a degree there as well, and we had to go through a couple of reorganizations. For me, it was a point like, well, there's a balance between loyalty and making a decision on what's the best for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's when I reached out to you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you looking for back then?
Yeah, so I enjoyed the startup vibe, being able to make a massive impact. So that got me excited. Then I wanted to sell something complex. I didn't know why, but just something that has a large impact on an organization. What I learned from working at a pre-seed startup a seed startup is that VC funding will definitely help in driving your strategy forward, even when you don't make the necessary revenue yet. However, what I wanted is a bit of a more mature company, ideally with, and I remember telling this to you, like, well, ideally a US-based company with well VC funded by well-known VCs, as well as a relatively small team, but also already with a relatively, you know, strong name and at least, you know, 10 or 20 million ARR. That was a bit of the goal. That I expressed to you back in the day.
And for people that are looking for a new role in SaaS, what does the VC funding say to you? Or what did it tell you back then?
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen the bubble where based on a good idea, people would or businesses would invest tens of millions. But, you know, if you just if you think about the concept of funding is that people trust in your business, you might already have product market fit, and the product market fit you can, or the maturity of the business you can assess based on the series that they're in. So you might expect something different from a Series A compared to a Series D. So when you're considering moving into software, I probably would recommend the more junior people to start at maybe Series C or up, because that's probably where you would get more support in your development. Whereas at a smaller startup, you typically see that product market fit is not discovered completely yet. The ideal customer profile still has to be determined. There's not a lot of customers maybe yet where you can learn from. So that's more discovery, experimentation, evangelizing a certain proposition. Maybe being first in the market where people don't believe it yet. Whereas if you're going to sell Salesforce, like, yeah, of course you need a CRM. We're not going to build it ourselves. And that's, of course, the other side of the spectrum.
I think also this question for hiring managers, you were like their top biller there. You already told us that you learned a lot from it.
Absolutely.
How could you not make that choice? Like, would you join a smaller startup again in your life or in your career?
Yeah, hypothetically, but then through network. So I wouldn't go blindly into a new position where, you know, a recruiter approaches me that I don't know where I don't know the VCs behind it, or I'm not connected to a degree with the current leadership team, or nobody that I trust is connected with that leadership team.
Yeah, okay.
Because every business can be so different, and it's hard to assess based on a website only.
Yeah.
So what I would be looking for then is, you know, like-minded people that are experts in a certain vertical, or are very aware about a problem that is existing in the market that maybe I'm not aware of yet, but they are the experts, where you would, you know, trust their idea and like, well, let's do this. I trust that this could be something big. Let's go to market. That's something that gets me really excited. And that's also what excites me at ChargeBee, because we make acquisitions of companies. We heavily invest in innovations. So every time there's something new and it's like, oh, nice. Yeah. This doesn't exist yet. I'm super excited to test how this lands with, you know, the people that we try to sell it to, and then start to get those first kind of results. And use it as, you know, both internal storytelling to inspire others, but as well get similar companies excited about, you know, making that part of the transformation. So that's I think the entrepreneurial kind of mindset, where I don't want to create something brand new, but I'd like to trust others that they build a great software solution that I couldn't even have thought of, that I'm inspired about, and like, well, then I would love, you know, partnering with you to help you go to market and be successful.
Yeah, that's cool to hear your thoughts on that.
That's yeah.
And I think today everyone knows ChargeBee in the SaaS ecosystem. When you started at ChargeBee, I think no one knew them.
Correct.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about that journey, like about how it was seen in the market, your first grind in ChargeBee? I want to hear everything about that.
Yeah, it's you know, you join a company with big expectations. I flew into India for, and it was January 2019, well, 4 years ago, or 2020, Jan 2020. Flew to India because we're Indian founded. Immediately got in touch with an amazing culture. We as Europeans, or maybe even Dutch people, might be, well, less open to new joiners and being kind of, well, let him or her prove himself first, and then we'll have a nice conversation. Whereas in India, completely opposite. So that was a great experience. Went through the onboarding, spent there three or 4 weeks, and then came back in the Netherlands, and there was no one. So I was the first guy, which was interesting. And where I started was like, well, okay, this is something completely new. Let's see who in my network has something to do with finance, because ChargeBee is a revenue infrastructure, and we help businesses with automation of, you know, billing, revenue recognition, online payments, enable product-led growth and sales-led growth, with the goals, of course, to, I know, drive audit readiness, prepare for M&A, be attractive to VCs, or maybe exit or IPO is something that they're planning, and we can contribute to that. But back in the day, my idea was, okay, we sell billing automation, and that's also what we did. We helped startups or maybe scale-ups with connecting the dots, ensuring that all the data would be in one ecosystem. So primarily finance data, help them move out of Excel, automate complex pricing models like tiered or usage-based. And what I did was, well, let's practice at least a pitch. At least I'm trying to see if this resonates with anyone. So I called the people in my network, so like, hey, join this new business. I'm not trying to sell it to you. I'm just trying to explain what we do. Can you please help me understand how that would hypothetically resonate in your organization? Is there anything that you get excited about? Because I don't understand what the problems are in this industry. Just trying to sell software, but I don't know why. And that resonated well. So that helped me with, getting up to speed pretty fast. That's of course when we hired Tarmo as well. Tens of years in financial technology, who could help me understand, like, well, yeah, Michael, I understand you know, there's other players in the market and they might be a bit more mature. I've either worked for them or I competed against them. However, the reason why I joined ChargeView is because our product is way stronger. So that's positioned as well. So he helped me a lot with those competitive pitches, which is primarily against Recurly and Chargeify. And we would win tons. And that's when I started to realize, okay, this is heading in the right direction.
Yeah, fast forward, because we heard that you your first salary in recruitment was 2,200 per month. Like, what kind of ballpark do we need to think of if someone is aspiring global top biller at a SaaS company?
Yeah, so at ChargeView, I've been typically always in top three. 2 years, number one globally. In terms of salary, you can think of hundreds of thousands of euros every year when you sell over a million or a million and a half for the business. And that's not just ChargeView. I think that's very common for businesses that sell enterprise solutions to organizations, then the sky is the limit. Yeah,
it's cool to hear that. And how someone that would start now in the software world, what are your learnings? Like, what is the journey from new to SaaS sales to become global top biller? I want to hear your learnings, but maybe also tips, what you can share for people that are maybe earlier in their journey.
Yeah. So nobody gives a shit about the product that you sell. Nobody does. So when you're trying to push a product to an organization, even when they knocked on your door for help, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will buy your software. You might be talking with the wrong stakeholder. Maybe somebody is just curious to understand what's out there and there's not even a project. And then you're at a point where it's like, okay, I think we are now at a technical win. Let's start discussing commercials. And they always say like, yeah, share the pricing proposal with us, because they're just curious.
And how do you overcome that then?
So overcoming that is to what I mentioned at the start. It's understanding the strategic objectives of the business. So let's say it's an organization that had multiple acquisitions. They did multiple acquisitions. We could assume that every individual entity or organization that they acquired have their own ecosystem. They've got their own billing system, ERP, CRM. They might use spreadsheets. Then they acquire another business. And typically what happens after acquisition is consolidation, both to impact customer experience, but more over operational efficiency, which eventually the goal is to be auditable. So when the big four knocks on your door every year, you have to make sure that the data that you show is correct. So I've built this customer. Can you prove that you also gave the service to the customer? You have had multiple iterations throughout the billing cycle and they have to translate in things like revenue accounting. Now, I'm going into a lot of detail here, but that helps us understand why businesses need to change. Like, okay, you acquired multiple organizations. It's a shit show when it comes to data. However, you're preparing for IPO.
Yeah.
So that's the critical event that we're working towards, which if you, and that was, I think, in the first 2 years of ChargeView, I was like, well, I'm looking at the individual entity and I see that they have two or three FTEs operationally or manually managing invoicing operations. Three people, expected salary is about 70K, cost of labor, 210K return on investment. Nice. You know, my deal is maybe 30 or 40K. So that's a 500X improvement or 500% improvement of what they have today. And then I was like, well, there is clear ROI. Why are you not buying? I don't understand it. But what I maybe forgot, I was talking to this one entity and I might have a competitor or another consulting firm. It's like, well, I'm going to talk to the parent company because they will top down initiate all the changes. And I might be stuck here with this financial controller that wants to automate some of his work. So what it taught me is go straight to top.
You said something interesting there, because when I asked you the question, like, hey, what were like pivotal moments in your career? You were 2 years in at ChargeBee and you basically said, hey, I'm losing deals still.
Yeah.
You were a global top biller and you still felt you did not have control.
Exactly.
So you wrote a book. What is that for the listeners again?
Omega Deal Secrets.
Okay.
Jamal Reimer.
Okay. Cool.
And that taught me the executive alignment. Mm-hmm. And executives tell you more about their future than somebody who's a director. Director might not even be aware. Executives' ass is on the line if it doesn't succeed. They probably are facing the same challenges and feel more comfortable sharing experience from CFO to CFO, from CEO to CEO, because they're facing the same problems.
And what other drivers do we have to be successful? Because we talked about money. I think we laughed about it a little bit. I think if we dive deeper, you have way other things that drive you. What are those?
Yeah, so I think it's together with my wife, Robina, that we can enjoy life. And that's where it started with, of course, just that we have the flexibility to, well, make decisions and enjoy ourselves. And whether that's a nice holiday in the Caribbean, but also make sure that we save the right amount of money in order to buy our dream house and be comfortable. Marry a wife or a husband that's very strong and and can serve as your foundation, that keeps you honest. It's definitely that. I mean, Robina gives me tons of flexibility. She supports me. She's a neuropsychologist, so she can help me as well understand my own behavior a little bit better. But at the same time, the grind, to be honest, is also required. But the grind is not so much in activity, I've got 8 discovery calls today, or I have 4 demos that I'm preparing for today. Just try to focus on the real deals and go deep, and don't be afraid to spend time researching, thinking, going over that email a million times. Go spend shit tons of time on business cases, especially when you're doing strategic deals. But also when you're selling smaller deals, overinvest in the opportunities that most likely will give you the biggest returns.
And how do you know that if you're like somewhat just a few years experience?
I think you should learn from the people that are more senior in your business. So don't be afraid to ask for help. What I see a lot is people reaching out on Slack and asking questions. I'm a firm, well, believer of spending face time with colleagues or like-minded people, where you can share experiences, share frustrations, share wins. When you're face to face, good luck saying no. Yeah. So if we're talking about asking for help and reaching out on Slack or WhatsApp or whatsoever, it's super easy for people to focus on their bigger priorities, the in-person priorities, that little conversation. Maybe it's even playing ping pong or having a bit of foosball or going for a walk with a colleague, even though your personal problem might be bigger than that fun stuff that we're doing there. But if you're in office or if you're face-to-face, and it doesn't have to be every day, ask that question. Just interrupt somebody in his work or her work, and they would be open to like, yeah, let's sit down 5 minutes, I'll help you out. You got to be patient and go through a bit of a roller coaster, because it's not always super cliche again. You know, it's not always straight. Growth is not linear. Let's put it that way. It helps think that every time you're like, oh, this is the deepest part, you'll get over it.
Yeah.
That there will be something if you just push through and continue, try to stay positive, stay motivated, and then eventually everything will come to an end, and then there will be a new problem.
Yeah.
So I think what I specifically, to your point, what was, for instance, less positive is I worked last year on a deal for over a year. Outbound sourced, everything went perfect. We went to Berlin multiple times. I flew in people from India, from the US to present to their executive team. We had multi-day workshops. Everything was heading in the right direction. And then, you know, silence. You knew when this was. I mean, we had my bachelor party. That was this year, where we were close to getting, well, a Hail Mary deal signed. which didn't push through. And yeah, I don't know, man. I was so frustrated. It felt like, well, not frustrated. I was very sad. It felt like if your loved one said, like, no, we're ending this relationship. Let's enjoy what we're doing here. Let's focus less on the numbers, which is incredibly difficult. But let's just focus on the most ICP customers out there that have the most ideal business scenario that requires change. There's a critical event that we're aware of. Let's dive deep, build business cases, learn, adapt, have fun. And then the numbers will come later. But then I think the critical thing is, don't make decisions when you're super happy. Don't make decisions when you're super sad.
I think that's a very good one. That's a very good one.
Be loyal. And then things will come on your path. Whether that's maybe a change in position or hypothetically, a promotion or deeper work or whatever. It works the best with people that trust you if you wanna grow.
Don't you ever get tempted like that to check everyone around you? Like, I sometimes have the, if I'm not balanced, I think the grass is always greener. Oh, I want to have more success here, or hey, this person has better than me, or whatsoever. Are you ever tempted looking outside instead of inside?
Standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's if you're, and I think that that's also part why you're so motivated to keep on changing and challenging yourself to do things differently. That's also because you see success of others, but that might not be a jealousy thing or an envy kind of thing, but rather, you know, there are two ways to look at it. So you could be jealous or you could be inspired.
Yeah.
And I think there's a very thin line between the two, or thin balance, whatever the expression is. I think jealousy was something that I experienced a lot back in the day, and it helps when you've been top performer for a while. And then if other close larger deals, it's like, oh, nice. You know, I can, first you're like, oh, this hurts. But then it's like, okay, great. This is perfect because apparently we can sell even larger deals.
Yeah.
And this may be a bigger organization. Let's have a conversation, share experiences, and yeah, use it as a motivation. That you're not only that one person that, for instance, closes the largest deals and be uninspired.
Yeah.
It's good when people around you buy bigger houses, close larger deals, drive whatever cars, or are on holidays 10 weeks per year and blowing it out of the water.
Yeah.
That should be inspiration, right?
Yeah. So it also sounds that you have been on a journey from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset in that sense.
Yeah, I never thought about it like that, but or maybe not actively, but yeah, it just doesn't work when you feel envy or when you hate that somebody else has success. It impacts the way you do business as well. So yeah, in order to overcome that, you have to change it.
Hey, Michael, thanks a lot. I think this is a great story of someone who successfully built his career in SaaS. Do you have any other tips for people that are listening that maybe won't get inspired by your journey?
Yeah. Well, of course, have a conversation with Noble Recruitment.
Yeah, yeah.
They helped me with my dream job. No, it's have a lot of conversations and try to have a broad mindset. Don't underestimate the network that you have, and especially talk with people that are more, you know, mature in their career than maybe you are yourself. Try to understand their, you know, learnings and failures on the one side to make sure that you're personally performing well, just as a human being. But then on the other side, don't just focus on, don't forget that when you pick a job, that's going to be your, well, something that you spent whatever percentage of your time. So look broad and try to understand the bigger picture before you sign something up, sign up with something.
Yeah, thanks a lot for all these inspiring learnings, Michael. I think we can talk for hours.
Like we usually do.
Yeah, I've seen you also grow personally, like as in, you up-leveled your live almost with your success in SaaS. I've been on your wedding in Italy. There was like almost a castle where all your friends came and all your family. So it's also nice to make that happen for yourself and for your family. And besides a great career, you're also building a great family and building a great human in yourself. So very happy to be in your network as well.
very appreciate that. And let's, I think we can consider ourselves good friends. So thanks so much for allowing me to work at Chartree, because you sold me well.
Thanks for joining us on SaaS Unscripted. To explore the latest career opportunities, visit our website, noblerecruitment.com. And don't forget to subscribe and leave your review on your favorite podcast app. Until next time on SaaS Unscripted.